Chapter 4. The day was by this time waning, when the gate again opened, and, with the brilliant golden light that streamed from the declining sun, and touched the very bars of the sooty creature's den, there passed in a little child, a little girl with beautiful bright hair. She wore a plain straw hat, had a door key in her hand, and tripped towards Mr. Traveler, as if she were pleased to see him, and were going to repose some childish confidence in him, when she caught sight of the figure behind the bars, and started back in terror. "Don't be alarmed, darling," said Mr. Traveler, taking her by the hand. "Oh, but I don't like it," urged the shrinking child. "It's dreadful." "Well, I don't like it either," said Mr. Traveler. "Who has put it there?" asked the little girl. "Does it bite?" "No, only barks." "But can't you make up your mind to see it, my dear?" For she was covering her eyes. "Oh no, no, no," returned the child. "I cannot bear to look at it." Mr. Traveler turned his head towards his friend in there, as much as to ask him how he liked that instance of his success, and then took the child out at the still open gate, and stood talking to her for some half an hour in the mellow sunlight. At length he returned, encouraging her as she held his arm with both her hands, and laying his protecting hand upon her head and smoothing her pretty hair, he addressed his friend behind the bars as follows: "Miss Pupford's establishment for six young ladies of tender years is an establishment of a compact nature, an establishment in miniature, quite a pocket establishment. Miss Pupford, Miss Pupford's assistant with a Parisian accent, Miss Pupford's cook, and Miss Pupford's housemaid complete what Miss Pupford calls the educational and domestic staff of her Lilliputian college. Miss Pupford is one of the most amiable of her sex. It necessarily follows that she possesses a sweet temper, and would own to the possession of a great deal of sentiment, if she considered it quite reconcilable with her duty to parents. Deeming it not in the bond, Miss Pupford keeps it as far out of sight as she can, which, God bless her, is not very far. Miss Pupford's assistant with a Parisian accent may be regarded as in some sort an inspired lady, for she never conversed with a Parisian, and was never out of England except once in the pleasure boat Lively, in the foreign waters that ebb and flow 2 miles off Margate at high water. Even under those geographically favorable circumstances for the acquisition of the French language in its utmost politeness and purity, Miss Pupford's assistant did not fully profit by the opportunity, for the pleasure boat, Lively, so strongly asserted its title to its name on that occasion, that she was reduced to the condition of lying in the bottom of the boat pickling in brine, as if she were being salted down for the use of the Navy, undergoing at the same time great mental alarm, corporeal distress, and clear starching derangement. When Miss Pupford and her assistant first foregathered, is not known to men, her pupils. But, it was long ago. A belief would have established itself among pupils that the two once went to school together, were it not for the difficulty and audacity of imagining Miss Pupford born without mittens, and without a front, and without a bit of gold wire among her front teeth, and without little dabs of powder on her neat little face and nose. Indeed, whenever Miss Pupford gives a little lecture on the mythology of the misguided heathens, always carefully excluding Cupid from recognition, and tells how Minerva sprang, perfectly equipped, from the brain of Jupiter, she is half supposed to hint, "So I myself came into the world, completely up in pinnock, mangnel, tables, and the use of the globes." Hobbit, Miss Pupford and Miss Pupford's assistant are old friends, and it is thought by pupils that, after pupils are gone to bed, they even call one another by their Christian names in the quiet little parlor. For, once upon a time on a thunderous afternoon, when Miss Pupford fainted away without notice, Miss Pupford's assistant never heard, before or since, to address her otherwise than as Miss Pupford, ran to her, crying out, "My dearest Euphemia, and Euphemia's Miss Pupford's Christian name on the sampler date picked out, hanging up in the college hall, where the two peacocks, terrified to death by some German text that is waddling downhill after them out of a cottage, are scuttling away to hide their profiles in two immense beanstalks growing out of flower pots. Also, there is a notion latent among pupils that Miss Pupford was once in love, and that the beloved object still moves upon this ball. Also, that he is a public character, and a personage of vast consequence. Also, that Miss Pupford's assistant knows all about it. For, sometimes of an afternoon, when Miss Pupford has been reading the paper through her little gold eyeglass, it is necessary to read it on the spot, as the boy calls for it, with ill-conditioned punctuality. In an hour, she has become agitated, and has said to her assistant, "Gee." Then Miss Pupford's assistant has gone to Miss Pupford, and Miss Pupford has pointed out, with her eyeglass, G in the paper, and then Miss Pupford's assistant has read about G, and has shown sympathy. So stimulated has the pupil mind been in its time to curiosity on the subject of G, that once, under temporary circumstances favorable to the bold sally, one fearless pupil did actually obtain possession of the paper, and range all over it in search of G, who had been discovered there by Miss Pupford not 10 minutes before. But no G could be identified, except one capital offender who had been executed in a state of great hardihood, and it was not to be supposed that Miss Pupford could ever have loved him. Besides, he couldn't be always being executed. Besides, he got into the paper again, alive, within a month. On the whole, it is suspected by the pupil mind that G is a short, chubby old gentleman, with little black sealing wax boots up to his knees, whom a sharply observant pupil, Miss Lynx, when she once went to Tunbridge Wells with Miss Pupford for the holidays, reported on her return, privately and confidentially, to have seen come capering up to Miss Pupford on the promenade, and to have detected in the act of squeezing Miss Pupford's hand, and to have heard pronounce the words, "Cruel Euphemia, ever thine," or something like that. Miss Lynx hazarded a guess that he might be House of Commons, or Money Market, or Court Circular, or Fashionable Movements, which would account for his getting into the paper so often. But, it was fatally objected by the pupil mind, that none of those notabilities could possibly be spelt with a G. There are other occasions, closely watched and perfectly comprehended by the pupil mind, when Miss Pupford imparts with mystery to her assistant that there is special excitement in the morning paper. These occasions are, when Miss Pupford finds an old pupil coming out under the head of births or marriages. Affectionate tears are invariably seen in Miss Pupford's meek little eyes when this is the case, and the pupil mind, perceiving that its order has distinguished itself, though the fact is never mentioned by Miss Pupford, becomes elevated, and feels that it likewise is reserved for greatness. Miss Pupford's assistant with the Parisian accent has a little more bone than Miss Pupford, but is of the same trim, orderly, diminutive cast, and, from long contemplation, admiration, and imitation of Miss Pupford, has grown like her. Being entirely devoted to Miss Pupford, and having a pretty talent for pencil drawing, she once made a portrait of that lady, which was so instantly identified and hailed by the pupils, that it was done on stone at 5 shillings. Surely the softest and milkiest stone that ever was quarried received that likeness of Miss Pupford. The lines of her placid little nose are so undecided in it that strangers to the work of art are observed to be exceedingly perplexed as to where the nose goes to, and involuntarily feel their own noses in a disconcerted manner. Miss Pupford being represented in a state of dejection at an open window, ruminating over a bowl of goldfish, the pupil mind has settled that the bowl was presented by G, and that he wreathed the bowl with flowers of soul, and that Miss Pupford is depicted as waiting for him on a memorable occasion, when he was behind his time. The approach of the last midsummer holidays had a particular interest for the pupil mind, by reason of its knowing that Miss Pupford was bidden, on the second day of those holidays, to the nuptials of a former pupil. As it was impossible to conceal the fact, so extensive were the dressmaking preparations, Miss Pupford openly announced it. But she held it due to parents to make the announcement with an air of gentle melancholy, as if marriage were, as indeed it exceptionally has been, rather a calamity. With an air of softened resignation and pity, therefore, Miss Pupford went on with her preparations. And meanwhile no pupil ever went upstairs, or came down, without peeping in at the door of Miss Pupford's bedroom when Miss Pupford wasn't there, and bringing back some surprising intelligence concerning the bonnet. The extensive preparations being completed on the day before the holidays, an unanimous entreaty was preferred to Miss Pupford by the pupil, mind-finding expression through Miss Pupford's assistant, that she would deign to appear in all her splendor. Miss Pupford consenting, presented a lovely spectacle. And although the oldest pupil was barely 13, every one of the six became in 2 minutes perfect in the shape, cut, color, price, and quality of every article Miss Pupford wore. Thus delightfully ushered in, the holidays began. 5 of the 6 pupils kissed little Kitty Kimmeens 20 times over, round total, 100 times, for she was very popular, and so went home. Miss Kitty Kimmeens remained behind, for her relations and friends were all in India, far away. A self-helpful, steady little child is Miss Kitty Kimmeens. A dimpled child too, and a loving. So, the great marriage day came, and Miss Pupford, quite as much fluttered as any bride could be, thought Miss Kitty Kimmeens, went away, splendid to behold, in the carriage that was sent for her. But not Miss Pupford only went away, for Miss Pupford's assistant went away with her, on a dutiful visit to an aged uncle, though surely the venerable gentleman couldn't live in the gallery of the church, where the marriage was to be, thought Miss Kitty Kimmeens, and yet Miss Pupford's assistant had let out that she was going there. Where the cook was going, didn't appear, but she generally conveyed to Miss Kimmeens that she was bound, rather against her will, on a pilgrimage to perform some pious office that rendered new ribbons necessary to her best bonnet, and also sandals to her shoes. "So you see," said the housemaid, when they were all gone, "there's nobody left in the house but you and me, Miss Kimmeens." "Nobody else," said Miss Kitty Kimmeens, shaking her curls a little sadly. "Nobody. And you wouldn't like your Bella to go to, would you, Miss Kimmeens?" said the housemaid. "She being Bella." "And no," answered little Miss Kimmeens. "Your poor Bella is forced to stay with you, whether she likes it or not, ain't she, Miss Kimmeens?" "Don't you like it?" inquired Kitty. "Why, you're such a darling, miss, that it would be unkind of your Bella to make objections. Yet my brother-in-law has been took unexpected bad by this morning's post. And your poor Bella is much attached to him, letting alone her favorite sister, Miss Kimmeens." "Is he very ill?" asked little Kitty. "Your poor Bella has her fears so, Miss Kimmeens," returned the housemaid, with her apron at her eyes. "It was but his inside, it is true, but it might mount, and the doctor said that, if it mounted he wouldn't answer." Here the housemaid was so overcome that Kitty administered the only comfort she had ready, which was a kiss. "If it hadn't been for disappointing cook, dear Miss Kimmeens," said the housemaid, "your Bella would have asked her to stay with you. For cook is sweet company, Miss Kimmeens, much more so than your own poor Bella. But you are very nice, Bella." "Your Bella could wish to be so, Miss Kimmeens," returned the housemaid, "but she knows full well that it do not lay in her power this day." With which despondent conviction, the housemaid drew a heavy sigh, and shook her head, and dropped it on one side. "If it had been anyways right to disappoint cook," she pursued, in a contemplative and abstracted manner, "it might have been so easy done. I could have got to my brother-in-law's, and had the best part of the day there, and got back, long before our ladies come home at night, and neither the one nor the other of them need never have known it. Not that Miss Pupford would at all object, but that it might put her out, being tender-hearted. Hosever, your own poor Bella, Miss Kimmeens, said the housemaid, rousing herself, is forced to stay with you, and you're a precious love, if not a liberty. Bella, said little Kitty, after a short silence. Call your own poor Bella, your Bella, dear, the housemaid besought her. My Bella, then. Bless your considerate heart, said the housemaid. If you would not mind leaving me, I should not mind being left. I am not afraid to stay in the house alone. And you need not be uneasy on my account, for I would be very careful to do no harm. Oh, as to harm, you more than sweetest, if not a liberty, exclaimed the housemaid, in a rapture, your Bella could trust you anywhere, being so steady, and so answerable. The oldest head in this house, the Ann cook says, but for its bright hair, is Miss Kimmeens. But no, I will not leave you, for you would think your Bella unkind. But if you are my Bella, you must go, returned the child. Must I? Said the housemaid, rising, on the whole with alacrity. What must be, Miss Kimmeens. Your own poor Bella acts according, though unwilling. But go or stay, your own poor Bella loves you, Miss Kimmeens. It was certainly go, and not stay, for within 5 minutes Miss Kimmeens' own poor Bella, so much improved in point of spirits, as to have grown almost sanguine on the subject of her brother-in-law, went her way, in apparel that seemed to have been expressly prepared for some festive occasion. Such are the changes of this fleeting world, and so short-sighted are we poor mortals. When the house door closed with a bang and a shake, it seemed to Miss Kimmeens to be a very heavy house door, shutting her up in the wilderness of a house. But, Miss Kimmeens being, as before stated, of a self-reliant and methodical character, presently began to parcel out the long summer day before her. And first she thought she would go all over the house, to make quite sure that nobody with a great coat on, and a carving knife in it, had got under one of the beds or into one of the cupboards. Not that she had ever before been troubled by the image of anybody armed with a great coat and a carving knife, but that it seemed to have been. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.